Welcome to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast, where we hear from some of the most relevant, up-to-date, informational speakers in our industry. In Episode 7, Steve Crittenden, soil scientist at Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, shares his story. Soil health in a changing climate, a new research project.
So I'm a scientist with Ag Canada here in Brandon, so I didn't have to come very far to speak to you this morning. Regis said, if you were here for the first talk this morning, that there's a lot of fuzz around soil health. So I don't know if I'm going to make it the issue more fuzzy or less fuzzy, but what I want to do is, I think, start some debate about soil health and crop yield and what we what our expectations are from our soils. So that's what I'm going to talk about. We're going to talk about what soil health is or isn't. We're going to talk about that there is a flip side to every coin, every management you practice, you impose. You probably do it for a reason, to benefit your yields and maybe some other ways that soil works, but probably I'm going to, I think, argue that there are trade-offs, there are flip sides to those coins. And then I'm going to talk about a new project that I will start this spring called Soil Health in a Changing Climate. So nobody's figures show up this morning, so I don't know. You probably won't be able to say anything, but I expected that you wouldn't, so I wrote it down anyway. So this is a figure from the United Nations, the Food and Agriculture Organization, that tries to explain how climate change can affect agriculture. So the predictions for climate change say there will be more dry spells, more drought. Of course, it depends on where you are in the world. More intense rainfall events. So drier, but more intense rainfall. Temperature variability. So you can imagine that in many ways, in many places, this can have negative impacts on crops, livestock, fisheries, and forestry. So this is, did everybody drive down 18th Street to get here today? 18th Street, you know the one? We're on 18th Street. Where is this thing? That's 18th Street going across the Assiniboine River in 2011. And this is actually the Ag Canada Research Station. This is Walmart and Starbucks and over there. So that's 2011. This was last year, 2017. So what it's supposed to show is a map of the prairies. The oranges, the reds, and the yellows, that's here, sorry, show that in that region of the world, last year, there was somewhere around 50%, more or less, of the normal precipitation amounts. So it's a map about drought. So what I want to get at is, do you expect your soil management to perform well when you have flooding one year and when you have drought in the next year? Of course we expect it to, but is that a reasonable expectation? So we want soil health. We want to maintain our soil health and improve our soil health, but since I started here in Manitoba recently, I've seen a lot of definitions of what soil health is and a lot of people talking about it and a lot of generalizations about it. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. So hopefully you can actually read it. So I pulled some lists of indicators for soil health from the internet there. So that's from the Soil Health Institute, from the Cornell, from the USDA, and from the Netherlands. So most people include a list of they include nutrient status that you know supply crops needs. Most have a measure of carbon in their soil tests, but only one of those four had crop yield in there. I found that interesting because I think when we talk about soil health, we said we need to have healthy soil so we have good yields. But we don't always measure soil health, crop yields when we talk about soil health. And earthworms, I highlight that because I'm going to use it as an example later on. I think it's my impression when I hear a lot of people talk about soil health and they say, oh, I have a lot of earthworms, I have a healthy soil. So that is true on one hand, but it's also not true at the same time. And I'll explain that, what I mean later on. So I included also soil physical indicators in this list. I think it's important to include those physical properties because your soil, it's quite complex. You have water in there, you have microbes, you have earthworms, and you have nutrients. So you have chemical, physical, and biological properties. So some of the properties they talked here about are soil structure, that's aggregates, right? That's when your soil is forming clods. They talk about the amount of water that's available to crops. That makes a lot of sense. Infiltration. I hear a lot about infiltration being an important soil health component, but in this list anyway, it only occurred in one of the four definitions. So I want to go through some more examples of what soil health is that I just pulled kind of from the internet to try and... So we see, on one hand, these four lists, a whole great big number of indicators of what soil health is, all these different things. All these things contribute to soil health. But you can also... This is from Kaylee Gash in North Dakota. She said I could use her tweet. She says, I love the simplicity and the practicality of this. Is your soil is healthy if it doesn't blow away. That's a good tip. Your soil is healthy if your plants are growing and not dying. So that's minimalist and practical, right? So there you have, so soil is healthy if you have those 20 parameters on the last list, or it's healthy if it doesn't blow away, right? So how do we, just to finish that thought. So she says, to meet those objectives, you can improve soil structure and improve biological activity. How do you do that? You can adjust your rotations, your tillage, and bring in organic matter through manures, compost, livestock, or even rotations and covers, I suppose. So those are quite different sets of lists of what soil health means, right? So as I said, I'm trying to start a conversation here. I'm not trying to necessarily give the answers. But you can also say what is unhealthy soil? If it's compacted, it's probably unhealthy. The infiltration's poor, there you go, we mentioned that. You have low water holding capacity, or you have pH issues which cause nutrient imbalances. I pulled that again from the internet ag web. So provincial governments are also getting into soil health. This is, you can download this now, this draft. Soil health and conservation strategy from Ontario. They say healthy soil is essential for life, and is the heart of our food system. So, sounds good, right? Doesn't it? So, how do they define what a soil healthy soil is? That a healthy soil should improve crop growth, yield, and quality. It should improve ability to absorb and store water. So those top two we've heard a little bit over and over. It should retain nutrients, and it can reduce greenhouse gas emissions and increase soil biota. So I'm starting to feel a little bit overwhelmed with all of the things that we expect a healthy soil to do and what soil should do for us. Not to say that our aims shouldn't be high. Well, they should be high, but I just wonder if we can maximize all of those things at once. So this, of course, I knew you wouldn't be able to read it. This is about soil health in conservation agriculture. So it's comparing a plowed system on the left to a no-till system on the right. And what they say, your soil health changes depending on your management, depends on your tillage system in this case. So they say plowed soil increases evaporation, increases runoff, wrecks your pore structure, compacts soil at the at the plow pan. But if you stop plowing, they say, you improve soil structure, you increase macrofauna, so like earthworms, for example, beetles, improve microbial functional groups, increase carbon, and increase that pore continuity. So that may be true in many cases, but I'm going to show you an example where that some of those parameters were not true. So my point is not to say that the discussion around soil health is not important and that we shouldn't strive for better yields and better functioning soils, but I don't think that we should necessarily package improve your soil health. It's not just one thing, it's a whole bunch of things, can be, and better soil health doesn't always mean better yield, better soil health parameters. So this is my favorite. The soil is healthy if it can do a good job of whatever function it's put to. So are those expectations too high, do you think? Can we have can the soil do whatever we need it to always? So if it floods like it did in 2011, is your crop yield going to be the same as the next year when it was dry like it was in 2017? So, it's too bad you can't see this. So this is an example of the soil health report card you get from Cornell. I'm not criticizing Cornell. I worked there for 2 years. They have great ice cream. If you ever get to go there, you got to stop in. You got to try the ice cream. It's made on campus. The students, in one of the food science courses, they design an ice cream flavor. You know, not just, you know, they don't just say, oh, I want to put gummy bears in the ice cream. They say, you know, from the nutrition, from the process to the marketing, and then the best one, they produce it and you can buy it for the next year. So anyway, so I'm not criticizing the system. I'm just using it as an example. So what the report card says, if you could see it, well, it has your name, tells you who you are, has a list of indicators. Those are here. Hopefully you can read it on the next slide. And it gives you, it tells you the value you got, and it gives you a ranking, and it gives you a score. And I put bell curve. Do you remember in high school when, maybe the class did really well, but maybe the class did not so well, and you bell curved it, right? It means you sort of shift the scores up a bit, the grades. So it means the point of what they do there is to, they put the sandy soils together when you get your score. So it's relative to other soils in your group, so apples to apples, orange to oranges. That's what they try to do. Yeah, so of course you can't read it. But these are the parameters that are in. So this is a study from North Carolina, and they measured all the parameters which go into the Cornell Soil Health Assessment. So that's available water, hardness, organic matter, pH, nutrients, etc. And they measured. Those are all the fields where they measured it. But basically, it's listed up there. It's they did till, no-till, organic, conventional, different sources of organic matter, different tillage systems. They wanted to get basically a wide range of management types. And they took the yields from those studies, those farms, and they plotted it against the score that you got from your soil health test from Cornell. So there are two plots here, this one and that one. Doesn't really matter which one I show you, because basically the message is that there was no relationship between the soil health score and your yield. So does that mean that soil health is invaluable? I don't think so. I think, as I said, the discussion around trying to improve the way our soil works, that's important. But I just wanted to highlight that you don't always have a high yield when you have a high soil health score. So they said the reason, one of the reasons they think, is that they didn't have a yield difference between their no-till and their conventional till plots. So that's in North Carolina. Maybe in Manitoba, where you have a lot less moisture, maybe you have a better advantage from your no-till. So maybe those results are different here. But I highlight that because of this sense I get around the conversation of soil health. Soil health is always good, your yield's always better. I just think it's a little more nuanced than that, and that's why I want to bring it up, so that we are thinking about that complexity when we talk about soil health and what we expect our soils to do. So back to the outline. We talked about soil health, what it means, what it doesn't mean, different definitions of it. So let's talk about the flip side to the coin. So that's, in Canada, that means the flip side to the coin is always the queen, right? No. It's either a beaver or a polar bear, and then the queen for some reason. But what I want to get at is that when you manage your soil in a certain way to have a certain benefit, so crop yield, better crop yield, or maybe you want to conserve moisture, for example, you probably have a flip side of the coin effect. You have a trade-off. There's something else. You're pushing it this way, and something squeezes out that way, is what I mean. So these are some slides of my previous work. This is in the Netherlands. So this is, we compared their plowing system. That's the plow. And this is what the soil looks like afterwards. They do that in the fall, always, to what they call a non-inversion tillage system. So they're, it's not a normal tractor, by the way. Widen the wheel tracks because they do controlled traffic farming. So that's a subsoiler instead of, so at a shallow depth, just a foot down, in the fall instead of plowing. And you can see they're doing that right, so that's in the fall, that's in the cover crop. So those are the two tillage systems. Those are the things that we changed there. We want us to compare. So hopefully you can actually see it. Okay. So one thing I find interesting is this conversation that a healthy soil has a lot of infiltration and a lot of water retention at the same time. And to be honest, I don't get how that necessarily works, because in the same way, if you put your straw in your water and you put your finger on it and you pull it up, the water stays in there, right? You know what I mean? I do that in the restaurants. Don't you do that in restaurants? You play with your straws in the water? But so it's about capillarity. So water is held in small pores, but water is infiltrated in large pores. So I think it's a complicated system if you want to have both of those things at the same time. And I see that mentioned a lot when we talk about soil health. So in this example, this is 1 year, data from 1 year. We had wheat faba bean, and we had sugar beets. And although this looks really small, we had higher infiltration in the plowing system. And we said that was because we loosened the soil, and actually we improved the earthworm populations. I'll show that data in a second. So the available water, though, was the opposite. So we had more water holding capacity in the non-inversion tillage, the reduced tillage one. At least at the surface, that's these bars here. So, this is just a picture of what it looks like. Basically, this is called you just pour water into these rings and measure how fast the water goes down, basically. So we had more carbon, more aggregation, more water holding capacity in the reduced tillage, but it was denser and we had slower infiltration. And while we said that was probably because, when you talk about no-till and you talk about infiltration, my sense is that people say, okay, well, you reduce tillage, you improve your earthworm populations. Well, here you have great big fishing earthworm, night crawlers. You know these, do you go fishing with these earthworms? The big ones. So they come out at night and they scavenge the crop residues and they pull them down into their burrows, but they're big vertical burrows. So when you reduce tillage, you expect your soil biology to compensate for what the plow is doing in terms of its loosening of the soil, creating those channels. But here, they don't have those species of earthworms. So the species they did have was able to take advantage of the crop residues which are being incorporated. So you're putting the crop residues into the soil, and the earthworms that are there benefited from that availability of that food. So that's what I'm saying here. This is the plowing system had more earthworms. This is earthworm biomass and infiltration. So we had more infiltration where we had more earthworms in the plow. So my point is, it's a bit rambling, but the point is that there are trade-offs most of the time between the different soil health indicators, the way we want our soil to work. So there are also trade-offs. How much time do I have, by the way? Yeah? So most people say earthworms are beneficial, and they are, because they create channels, they're breaking down organic matter, so they're releasing that nitrogen so crops can use it, take it up. But this was a study from some colleagues of mine. This is supposed to show, if you can see it, that earthworms take in crop residues and soil particles, pass it through their bodies. What comes out the other side is sort of aggregated soil, but you get greenhouse gas emissions, so N2O and CO2, from the earthworm and from the soil that comes out of the earthworm. And I'm not saying you should get rid of the earthworms in your fields. It's probably not possible anyway. But the point is that this soil health indicator does have a trade-off, has a negative flip side of the coin. So those are the actual data that show. So this was, 100 studies, more than 100 studies, that showed when earthworms were present, you had higher CO2 and you had higher N2O than when earthworms were not present. So here's another example that shows, there's a lot of data on there, but it's going to talk about how in no-tillage, water content is the driver for N2O production. So this is, it's in Scotland, sorry. So it's quite a bit wetter than here, clearly. So these bars, that's when it rains. There's the N2O production from no-till. It rains, N2O production. Rains, N2O production, and so on. So it was, in this study, over this summer period, the no-till always had higher greenhouse gas emissions than the tillage. And I highlight that for a reason I'll show in a second. So that was the point. So I want, when we talk about soil health, we need to realize that if we're our management, we're trying to optimize soil health to get better yields, we probably can't optimize all of those soil functions, all those health indicators at once. There's a flip side to every coin. So now this is a study I'm going to start this year. Hopefully you invite me back next year to tell you something about how it's going. The point is, I want to try and find management practices which will do well given predicted climate change. So I'm going to try and simulate drought, but I'll show you what that means in a second, and measure soil health. And so I'm going to try and measure some of those beneficial properties and some of the trade-offs as well. So the trade-offs I've selected, greenhouse gas emissions and Fusarium head blight. So this was a study, a survey of studies of greenhouse gas emissions from the prairies and from Ontario, Quebec. These data, which you clearly can't see, they are all from Alberta and Saskatchewan. So there were no sites in Manitoba in this case. And they had, contrary to what I just showed you from Scotland, they had higher N2O from the no-till. From the conventional tillage, excuse me. So I suppose you have less water here than you have in other parts of the world, because the conventional wisdom is more water, more N2O, in most cases. But that wasn't what they found in the prairies, in the western prairies, in this study. But here have, those are the numbers from Ontario, Quebec. Believe me when I say that they're much higher than they were in the prairies, but they had the opposite. They had no-till, higher N2O, the same as the Scottish example. So I'm confusing things a little bit here, sort of on purpose, because that's why I'm going to try and study that here in Manitoba. They also highlighted that that they couldn't find anyone who had looked at greenhouse gas emissions from irrigated systems. So maybe to better compensate for drought and heavy rainfall, you might change your tillage system, or if it gets drier, maybe you irrigate more. So what the idea of the project is, what are the trade-offs? Do you increase greenhouse gas emissions? Do you increase fusarium if you start irrigating more, or if you start no-tilling to a greater degree? So this is a slide about the life cycle of fusarium. I brought in a partner from Morden to look at this because I don't have any idea about fusarium, to be totally honest with you. But I have seen that different fusarium species will benefit from different tillage systems. So depending on where your crop residues are, where the fusarium is living, being promoted, you will change the incidence of those fusarium species. So the study, we're going to do it in, so I tried to get a range of soils, sort of across the prairies, but a range of moisture contents as well. So Swift Current here in Brandon, and at Portage and at Morden. So the basic design is we'll have a set of plots which are irrigated, a set of plots which are not irrigated, and then within that, you do drought simulation, which is just a shed, basically. That's the climate change simulator. It's just a shed, basically. But the idea is to try and reduce the amount of incident precipitation that comes onto the field. And then in there, you measure those soil health properties that I mentioned. So I wanted to just put a couple of quick slides at, this is the study design at Morden and at Portage, which is an existing study that we're going to try and take advantage of. So it's, I thought you might think it's interesting. So the design, they call it the matrix, because in the first year you drive this way with five different crops. You plant them, horizontally. And the next year you plant those same crops randomized in the other direction. So the result is this sort of checkerboard matrix of a big number of crop rotations that you've achieved within a short amount of time. So then they're going to till across and no-till across, and they're going to irrigate and they're not going to irrigate. So that's the study design at those two sites. That's a picture of the end of the year in 2017. I just thought it might be nice to see the three crops all at once. And as I said, so we're going to measure nutrient fluxes, physical properties, so those are beneficial soil health parameters, and we're also going to measure some of those flip side of the coin stuff, so the greenhouse gas emissions and fusarium. So just to recap what we talked about, if you're still awake, ready for lunch, there are a lot of soil health definitions out there. What I wanted to get at is what I think it's just important to remember. Soil health doesn't always mean high yield. It's a complex system, you know that. But it is important that we continue to talk about how our soil's working and how our management will affect those indicators. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast. We'll see you next year from January 22nd to 24th, 2019.